is the Todd and Friends podcast.
I don't like to waffle on predictions. That doesn't mean I always hope I'm right.
Oh, what's he going to do? Oh, come on.
I'm with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Todd, I knew we'd agree on something here.
From the KWLM Sports Studio.
I'm Todd Brigette. Joining us on the podcast today is Alan Horton. He is the voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves, the series-winning Minnesota Timberwolves. I believe the first time I can say that for you, Alan Wright, that you're the play-by-play guy of a series-winning team.
Yep, this is true. I mean, it's the first time in 20 years the Wolves have won a first-round or any playoff series. And, you know, it's something they've been building to over the last couple of years. And that's, it's really encouraging to see. And you know what? It was really encouraging to see how the Timberwolves reacted. They reacted very matter-of-factly. I think they knew this was coming with the way they played in this series, but they treated it with the proper respect. They didn't go celebrate with champagne in the locker room or anything like that. It was a very business-like approach. They enjoyed the win, and now they can't wait to get to this next round because they don't feel like they are done, which is a great, great sign.
Boy, that's for sure. And I and others were thinking it maybe wasn't the greatest matchup because they had gone 0-3, had lost some previous games to the Suns. That wasn't in their minds at all. I mean, when they came out and just dominated game one, they put that narrative to bed right away.
Boy, they did. And then they backed it up in game two. And then the question became, can you do that on the road? Well, they backed that up in game three with a blowout win.
Yep.
And then you've really got the Suns against the wall because no team has ever come back from a 3-0 series deficit. And the Wolves made sure of that with the sweep. Oklahoma did it to New Orleans. And, you know, it's when you're up 3-0 and Denver finally put away the LA Lakers last night. So that's three more teams. So I think it's 154-0 is what teams are when they lead a best of seven series 3-0. But a really impressive performance. And I thought not only defensively, which obviously led the way for the Wolves, but offensively, too, they got their offense cranked up.
Yeah.
And Anthony Edwards was incredible, and there were just a lot of good. It was a well-balanced attack. It wasn't just Ant, just like, you know, the opposite of what the Suns did with Booker having 49 last game and Durant having 34, but nobody else with more than 9 points. So it was a much more balanced attack. It was team basketball that beat a bunch of individuals, and that was starkly clear in this series.
I enjoyed Ant's post-game press conference with Kat sitting next to each other and talking about keeping Kat out of foul trouble, and Ant has been talking to him about it. I really enjoyed that kind of by-play between them. You can see the leadership just oozing out of Edwards.
Yeah, it's really impressive how he has come into this league, he came into this team, and has how he has risen up, and he has done it in a way that has kept the team chemistry together, that has embraced Kat, Rudy, Mike, all of those guys. Ant has a very special personality and it's something that I think that just comes naturally to him, the way he leads versus maybe some other players, you know, would have led. I think back to the Jimmy Butler days when you thought you had something here with Kat and Wiggins and Butler. And Butler went about things a completely different way that ended up alienating his teammates. And Ant's been able to do it in a way that embraces his teammates and gives them confidence and purpose and all those things where they're now rooting for Ant just as much as he's rooting for them. He's a really unique talent, not only on the floor, but off the floor as well.
Yeah, Butler was a crack the whip guy and kind of get after guys pretty tough verbally in practice, right? And then Ant does things a little differently.
Yeah, and also there was that, you know, the contract stuff got in the way, too, where, you know, Jimmy just came in at a time when his deal was coming up in an extra year, wanted to get paid early. He saw that Kat and Wiggins were making more money than him, and that really did not help the dynamic either. And, of course, that was blown up after one season. But Ant's a different cat. I mean, it's really impressive to see what he's doing. I'm running out of ways to describe how impressive he's been. I mean, this is his fourth year. Every year he makes a leap personally, and his teams have made a leap collectively. And that's rare. He's only 4 years in. He's 22 years of age. He finally won his first postseason series. The team has finally done that, and he's not done. Like, it's the mindset. You know, when he tells Scott Van Pelt or the TNT crew postgame, you know, I just want to kill who's ever in front of me, and using that term loosely, you know, he's got that mindset of just wanting to beat his opponent, whether it's his childhood hero in Kevin Durant, whether it's Devin Booker, whether it's anybody he matches up again. I think of the two matchups against Boston this year. Mm-hmm. He just went toe-to-toe with Jason Tatum. He's got this drive to want to be the best. And to be the best, you got to beat the best. And now they're going to face the best in the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah. 2:16 on the clock. Ant gets the ball. He does a little rocker move and just a blow-by on Bradley Beal. And then Kevin Durant wanted no part of trying to stop him at the rim as he threw that down. That was a dunk that, to me, said, you are done, Suns. You're all done.
Yep. And this was a game that, you know, the Suns finally showed some fight, finally showed some intensity, some effort. And this game looked like it was going to go the Suns' ways multiple times in the fourth quarter. I mean, when Booker's scoring 49, you can't stop him. He gets to the free throw line over 20 times in that game. Mm-hmm. And then Durant's pouring in 34. It just looked like the Timberwolves were doomed. But every time you looked up, the Wolves were right there with them. The Suns never got separation. And then Ant got going. 15 in the third, 16 in the fourth quarter, 31 points second half was just remarkable. And that play punctuated the series, right? And I'll even take it a step further at the other end of the floor that before that dunk, the Wolves had that great defensive possession where the ball got rotated around. The Wolves made multiple defensive efforts, and they got the steal. Nikhil Alexander-Walker steps in front of Bradley Beal's pass, picks it off, and then the ensuing play is that dunk. Those two plays combined, I think, kind of summarized that series. It was a dominant defensive multi-effort for the Timberwolves on that end of the floor, and then Ant, you know, has just ripped the soul from the Suns at the other end. I mean, this is the game was on the line. It was a two-point game. Your season is on the line, and Durant doesn't even go up to contest. It's just maybe he got there a little bit late, you could argue, but you've got to go up there and at least foul and not let that happen to try to keep your season alive. But I just think that summarizes where the Suns are. I just when push came to shove, they said all the right things about coming back from 2-0 down 3-0, but they weren't willing to do the things to really actually go out there and put the effort and energy, which has to be at an exceptional level, exceptionally high level. And if you don't have that, you're not pulling off the first 3-0 comeback in NBA history.
Yeah. Great depth for the Timberwolves, too. You know, the Suns have kind of got that old school big three, but they don't have enough otherwise. They just don't have enough.
No, not especially with Grayson Allen out. Even if he is out there, I don't think he swings the series in their favor by any stretch. I do think they're probably a better team or a different-looking team with him out there fully healthy. But that's what happens. You get banged up. I mean, that's what happened to the Wolves last year. They ended the postseason without Naz Reid, without Jaden McDaniels, lost Kyle Anderson, still put up a fight against Denver. But that's why you have depth on a roster, is because you can't count on, if you only have seven playable players, which basically the Suns do, maybe eight if you want to count Drew Eubanks, who didn't even play in game four, you know, you have to assume that maybe one of those guys is not going to be 100% or miss a couple of games. Do you have the depth to overcome that? I think what continues to surprise me is that people think you have the three best players, put them together, and you're going to win games. Yeah, maybe. And maybe in the regular season that works. But when you get into a series, I'll take depth. I'll take a more balanced team offensively, defensively than three superstars anytime. Because the Wolves, when they went to their bench, and I don't even consider them really going to their bench. I don't feel like Naz Reid and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Kyle Anderson was not a big factor in this series, but I think he will be going up. I think you can put Kyle Anderson in this category too. Mm-hmm. I just feel like those are three starters that could start on other teams that just kind of get mixed into the rotation. So it's really an eight-man starting lineup that just kind of rotates. And all the lineups that Chris Finch put out there were all pretty good. I mean, you can meld those guys together. They're all seamless, whether it's Naz and Rudy out there, whether it's Kat and Naz, whether you got Nikhil in the backcourt with Mike or Nikhil running the point. You know, I just think they have a really good rotation. And in the playoffs, you're going to play those guys a lot of minutes, and that's all you really need, seven or eight people deep. And the Wolves had a really good flow, I think, in the guys that they could throw out there. And it was painfully evident that Phoenix just didn't have those options. I mean, Royce O'Neal went almost 60 minutes without scoring a point. Eric Gordon had his moments, but, you know, he's a guy who's 36 years of age and on the wrong side of things still could knock down some threes. Boy, that jumper is still just as pure as ever. He might be shooting like that when he's 60. It's pretty impressive, but it's the depth for the Timberwolves was painfully evident in this series.
Remind me again on the trade that brought Conley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Was that just to make the numbers work on the salary cap? I mean, how did we wind up fleecing Nickeil Alexander-Walker along with Mike Conley in that trade?
Yeah, I mean, the salary matchup was, you know, D'Angelo Russell going out and Mike Conley's number coming in. Mm-hmm. And I think there were a number of different Utah Jazz players who had a salary that could have, when matched with Mike Conley, equaled what you needed to equal.
Okay.
And I don't know if push came to shove. I don't know if that was, you know, Nickeil was the targeted guy they wanted, or when they looked at who those guys could be, hey, we want Nickeil. I do know Chris Finch liked Nickeil Alexander-Walker. They were in New Orleans together when Nickeil was a rookie. And there were some circumstances with Nickeil that he just never got a real opportunity in the kind of role that he needed to be in. So he went from New Orleans to Utah. I think he was in briefly, never played in Portland, but was a part of Portland for a little bit, and finally found stability in Minnesota. However it worked out, the Wolves benefited in the hugest way possible because Mike Conley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker, the Wolves aren't in this position without those two guys.
No doubt about that. You mentioned Finch here a bit ago, little friendly fire incident, unfortunately. How did you see that? It was unfortunate. It looked to me like, you know, when Conley said it too, he got bumped a little bit, that threw him off, and thus the collision with Finch there on the sideline.
Yeah, Booker ran him right out of bounds. Yeah. And, you know, I don't really, you can blame Booker for some things in the series. There was some chippiness at the ends of games 2 and 3. That I think turned a lot of fans off of Devin Booker. He just was, you know, obviously the frustration is there, but you can't resort to the type of things he was doing. I didn't put this in that category. It's just a foul at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're trying to foul and make something happen, Mike does the smart thing of just, you got to go full speed to get by some defenders. You got to hip check. And unfortunately, Chris Finch was right out there in between kind of the hash mark and the center court line and just collided and went down. It's weird. I've never seen a coach go down like that before. There's been some collisions I've seen through the years, but nothing like that. And then to see it be serious was concerning. And it was such a departure because nobody's kind of seen that before. Then it's serious. Then you've got to work his way back to the locker room. And then you're like, oh yeah, there's under 2 minutes to go in this game.
Right.
Closeout game. It's still the game is still in balance here. Nobody's won a thing yet. We got to figure things out, and the way that kind of changed the atmosphere in the arena too was a little bit strange because you're obviously concerned for somebody because you can tell right away it's pretty serious. He can't put any weight on it. He's got to be helped back to the tunnel and back to the locker room where he's attended to by the doctors. But it was a really surreal situation. Unfortunately, the Wolves were able to do what was necessary the final 90 seconds or however long that was to close out that game.
What happens? Does Finch, I mean, he's not going to be able to be doing what he was. He's going to have a big brace on his leg, right, from hip to ankle.
He flew back with us on Monday. The Timberwolves spent the night in Phoenix, as they usually do when they end a trip in the West Coast or in Arizona. So he flew back with us. He had a brace on his right knee. He was able to get off the plane on crutches and work his way back to getting in the car and getting he's going to have surgery tomorrow. It's a ruptured patella tendon.
Oof.
Everything is still TBD, I think. I think once they come out of surgery, they'll have a better idea once he starts to recuperate that day and the following day of what's possible. Does he travel to Denver? Does he not travel to Denver? If he travels, is he on the bench? Is he on the second row? Is there someplace safe where he can have his leg extended? The bench is a very crowded place. It's not exactly the type of area where you want to have someone with their leg out. That's, you know, Larry David got into trouble for that, for tripping Shaq in one of those Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's
not real, it's semi-real. It could happen. That's not safe for him or for anybody else to have his legs sticking out there. Then there's the question of what kind of, you know, if he's back in the locker room, what kind of communication can you have to the sideline? How much should there be? How much should there not be? So I think they'll work out all of those things. And the good news is that Chris Finch has assembled a staff that it's the same as if a player goes down. The players come together. They know how to make up for that absence. The coaching staff does the exact same thing. They did it earlier this year in a game at Cleveland when Chris Finch was ill. Mike Anori stepped up just like he did at the end of game 4. They've done it before when Pablo Prigioni has been away with the Argentina national team. He's the head coach there. He's missed time before over the last couple of years. So this is the kind of system that Chris Finch has put in place. It's a system of trust. They all know what to do. They all know the philosophy. And really, you don't skip a beat because the way Mike Inouye and Chris Finch are so tight, they share half a brain, I think. So they're basically managing the game the same way. Sure, they have different attributes that they'll bring to the sideline. But for the most part, the game plan doesn't change depending on who the coach is. Substitutions are pretty Micah is really in tune to that to begin with. And so those don't really change at all either.
Give us his background a little bit. He has some prior head coaching experience, doesn't he?
Micah does not. He's been an assistant coach. You know, it's interesting. He came up as a baseball player. He's a really good baseball player. Played Division I at, I want to say it was Indiana. I think it was the University of Indiana. And I cannot remember the connection he had, but he finished up his college career. He was not good enough to get drafted or go on to the next level of baseball. But he had a high school, or his hometown was connected to someone with the Toronto Raptors. And I want to say, gosh, I can't remember who it was, but not Dwayne Casey. It was somebody before that in Toronto that encouraged him to get into coaching. And he came up to Toronto, and he started his coaching career, even not having that kind of basketball background that most coaches have. But he's a coach at heart. And when you're a coach, you know how to handle players. You know tendencies. You know all these things, what to do with matchups and those kind of things. And so he's earned the respect of the players through the years, no doubt about it, even though he doesn't have that same background as a lot of the players do or a lot of the coaches. He comes at it from a different perspective and is really, he has bounced around the league as an assistant coach, as you do in this league, just like Chris Finch did. And really, I think he might have an opportunity to be a head coach somewhere along the line. He's been that successful.
It doesn't surprise me, as said, he's a baseball guy a little bit, because he has really a kind of a quirky sense of humor, quite a funny guy on a lot of the interviews we see. So he's a little off, and me being a baseball guy, you know, I understand guys are a little off.
That's right. Yeah, he's quick to be self-deprecating in interviews and stuff. And he was even joking after the game in Game 4, like, oh, yeah, the coaching made all the difference in the final 2 minutes, as he's kind of rolling his own eyes at his own statement. And, he's quick to make that's what makes this staff so much fun to be around, is that they, as serious as they are, they know how to laugh at themselves and each other and keep things loose. And they're enjoying the ride as much as they are working hard for it. They are also enjoying their time together too. It's an important balance to have.
Game 1 coming up on Saturday. Quick preview, what do you want to see out of the Timberwolves in Game 1?
You want to see some fight. You want to see them take it right down to the wire. I think the Wolves are well-positioned this time around. I think there's a little bit, you know, if you were to look at the matchup last year and then compare it to this year, I would say, you know, hopefully from a Nuggets perspective, you know, they have reached the pinnacle. They are champs. And while they still have a drive to repeat, you wonder if their motivation might just be down a couple of levels from last year. They look a little bit, you know, I hate to say it, but they look a little more beatable, maybe. Jokic made a few mistakes the other night. You expect him to make the perfect play every time. I think in this series against L.A., they've allowed the Lakers to play from ahead for most of the series. It's been really interesting to see that. That's a dangerous game to get into. As talented as they are and as good as they are, especially on the home floor and coming back, you don't want to do that against a team like the Timberwolves. They have found that the Wolves have played from ahead for most of the series against the Suns. I think the Wolves are at a different level with the way they're playing, the way their defense is, their health. Remember, there was no Naz Reid, no Jaden McDaniels in that series last year against Denver when they lost in 5 games. They even lost Kyle Anderson in Game 5, I believe it was. So the Wolves were really shorthanded in that series. And the Wolves did not play last year in the regular season like they played this year. Yeah. They're a different team at a different level, and I think are well-positioned, maybe best in the West to try to knock off Denver, maybe best in the NBA to try to knock off this juggernaut of a Nuggets team, because Murray and Jokic right now are just, they're at an all-time elite level. And can you find any way to slow that down? What you have to do is the same thing they did against Booker and Durant, is that those guys are incredible shot makers, and they're going to make some shots. You can't have breakdowns that give them easy buckets. Make them earn everything they get. You live with the results. Even if they score, they know it's going to be a long night. And you have to do the same thing against Jokic and Murray. You know those guys are going to have their moments. You just have to ride that out, make it as difficult as possible, stay fundamentally sound and not make the kind of mistakes, you know, the unforced errors on turnovers, breakdowns defensively. Maybe you're going to have one or two a game, but you just, you know, those become crucial. Every point matters. And I just think the Wolves are well positioned to give them a real fight in this round. It's going to be a great series, I think.
Sure is. We'll be tuned in, Alan. Thanks so much.
You got it, Todd.
Alan Horton, voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves on the Todd and Friends podcast. It's brought to you by Granite Bank in Spicer and Cold Spring. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Watch for future episodes of the Todd and Friends podcast at KWLM.com or on the air here at KWLM, 1340 AM and 96.3 FM.